colorism is a really big thing. So right. it's basically preferring people of lighter skin to darker skin. And that is quite within communities. So within the Asian communities, African communities, I was lucky that I wasn't forced to use whitening creams or skin bleaching creams, but a lot of people were.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's podcast, my guest is Sonia, the founder and CEO of Tala Thrive. So what is Tala Thrive? It's an AI-enabled mental health platform that connects people to therapists and coaches who understand their culture, language, and/or religion, and therefore get culturally competent care. And look, I'll be perfectly honest with you. As someone who is white, who is privileged, who is British, who is cisgendered, who is basically everything privileged that you can be, these conversations are always educational. They're always, you're kind of going into them going, well, I hope I ask questions that are sensitive and get to the heart of the conversation and open it up and give a platform for people to kind of really educate and to share. And I hope that's the case today. It's a bit longer than normal. Our usual interviews, as you'll be aware if you listen regularly, are about 15 to 20 minutes. This is longer. This is about 28 minutes, and it covers a lot of ground. And because of that, we're not doing our usual knockabout intro and telling you what we've been up to and having a bit of a laugh and a joke. That will obviously be back in short order. But today's interview, as I say, a bit more detailed, a bit more in-depth, really interesting to hear from Sonia. So I hope you spend the time investing in this interview. She's got some really interesting points. And I hope it's enlightening and helps, perhaps, if you're like me, see situations and circumstances, perhaps, through different eyes. Today I'm sat with Sonia. You've kindly invited me into your home, having tea over your dining table. Mm-hmm. You are the founder of, make sure I get this right, but Tala Thrive? It is Tala. There's not some pronunciation that me being British and kind of overlooking.
No. You're good. I think also it's just easy to say it in so many different kind of accents. No, yeah. Tala means to speak in a few different languages.
Ah, which languages?
So Swedish and some of the Nordic ones are similar. And in Tagalog in the Philippines, it means star.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start then with a little bit about you and your background, because your accent betrays that you are, you're certainly not British.
No, although I think I'm picking it up a little bit more. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. No, I'm Australian from Melbourne, born and raised predominantly. Mm-hmm. But my parents are from Malaysia, and mm-hmm. then we have some Indian heritage as well. A little bit mixed, but predominantly grew up in Australia and then a stint in Shanghai for 4 years.
And you've also lived in Denmark as well for a few years.
Lived in Copenhagen for 2 years. I lived in Stockholm for 4 years. Mm-hmm. I lived in New Zealand for 2 years. I studied in Hong Kong for 6 months. And now in London.
And I suppose that perspective from lots of different cultures and identities is the reason for Tala having the name that it does and also actually being what it is, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like, I think just my personal experiences, but then also moving around the world and kind of seeing it from different countries, different people, and the fact that I think a lot of us from different ethnic backgrounds, but being based in the Western world, so where we are a minority, seem to have very similar experiences and issues, I guess, that we face. So, yeah.
So what does Tala actually do?
Yeah, so it's Tala Thrive in full. So Thrive, we want to push a movement around thrive and not just survive. Mm-hmm. Because we do feel like, so we're mild to moderate care in terms of mental health support. And so we think that a lot of our clients are quite high functioning as it is, but we want to help them thrive and just do better in every aspect of their life. So we are an online platform for matching you to therapists and coaches who understand your culture, language, or religion. So for culturally competent care.
Out of interest, what led you to this as an entrepreneur, as a kind of a founder? Why particularly this mission and purpose?
Yeah, I think for me, I studied psychology at uni in Australia. I was always really interested in this space, and I guess a lot around, you know, how do you become the person that you are today, and what are those experiences and things that made you into who you are today. Mm-hmm. And so I was always interested in that, then very quickly kind of fell into the startup ecosystem. So working in venture capital in the Nordics and mentoring a bunch of companies, helping the Bank of Denmark run their Impact Accelerator program for startups, being a mentor in residence and all of that. But for me, I think that once I kind of had all this experience working with so many tech companies, and, you know, I think probably over 200 companies now that I've worked with, and I just felt like, you know, it's all really interesting and whatnot. But I think, you know, also when I got to be a mentor in residence in Copenhagen, I requested that I only mentor female founders mm-hmm. or founders of color, because it's an area where I felt like most of my passion lied, that I really wanted to support underrepresented founders. I also like to call it underestimated founders a lot of the time. But it's just somewhere where I really felt a passion to help people, I think. And it's just, I guess, from my own personal experiences. And I just felt like there's a lot more adversity that we face in every aspect. And so I guess when I moved to London, my partner got a job here, and I decided to move over early last year. And it was just a time where I'm like, okay, I need to do something of my own now, but also not just something, but I would never do a startup that just didn't have a massive passion for me. I think that it is so hard work being a founder. And for me personally, I couldn't see doing this for anything other than this needs to be a product in the market. Like, there's so many people that we can help to, like, with this product that, yeah, it just needs to be a thing. And I don't understand why it's not really today. And so for me, that's kind of the biggest reason as to why I founded this specifically.
So the cultural aspect, the cultural competent aspect is absolutely central. But let's start by just talking a little bit more about mental health and entrepreneurship, because you allude to there that it's so hard.
Yeah.
And you've obviously worked with a lot of entrepreneurs when you were a mentor in residence.
Yeah.
We talk about kind of burnout culture, and we talk about hustle less so than we used to, but we, you know, those kind of stereotypes where it comes to entrepreneurs and founders.
Yeah.
What did you find the kind of the lived experience was in terms of the pressures that people were putting under themselves and the toll that was taking, perhaps?
Yeah. I'm just, this whole, I don't know what to call it, I guess hustle culture or whatever it is just so detrimental. I think just, and I think it's less so now, as you mentioned, but this idea of, oh, I'm working through the night and I'm doing this. And to be fair, we do it, right? Like, I think I've literally had 2 weekends off since May last year. Like, I'm not sugarcoating this. This is, it's horrible. It's not sustainable. But at the same time, I in no way advocate for this. Like, I don't think it's good. I don't like the people that go, oh yeah, I'm so cool, I'm an entrepreneur, because, like, you know, I'm working around the clock, I'm doing this. Like, this, you know, I've done a lot of the previously, like, work hard, play hard type of stuff, right? And I think a lot of times you do kind of have to in venture capital, to be honest. There's so many, like, conferences and events and parties and things like that, where a lot of it has been networking, and it's been really, really great for my career and network in general. But it's gone to the point now where I barely drink, just purely because I can't take a day off. I can't be hungover. And I think it's just so much better for my health in general, mental and physical. So
do you think we still kind of glorify that aspect of an entrepreneur lifestyle?
Yeah, so much. And I think it frustrates me that we do, because it is seriously hard work. And I think, you know, when you talk about it, you kind of go, oh yeah, but, you know, but that's just what an entrepreneur is. And, like, oh yeah, but, like, that's, you know, I don't know, it's exciting in some way, and that's, you know, cool or whatever. And I think, you know, it's less cool to not drink, or it's less cool to, I don't know, for me, like, you know, do certain things to kind of support my mental health. Whereas I'm like, I need this to be able to be a founder. So yes, the hours are horrible, and yes, there's a lot of pressure, and it really does affect your mental health. But I don't want to glorify that fact. For me, I think it's that you need to work on that you need to find some sort of balance. If not, you are going to burn out, and it's just not okay.
So you were at pains to stress the thrive element of Tala Thrive at the top of the interview. You said, you know, it's not just about surviving, it is about thriving.
Yeah.
You yourself said you've not had a weekend that you can kind of clearly remember in recent times.
Yeah.
You don't drink.
No.
So you've touched on what you do to maintain your mental health, but they sound very much like survival coping mechanisms as opposed to thriving. So how do you get to the point where you're managing your mental health in a way that you are enjoying what you are doing and you are thriving?
Right. Yeah. I mean, 100%. I think, you know, I'm a very clear client of our platform, right? So obviously I think it is important to see a therapist or a life coach. I think that's really helpful in certain areas and depends on where you are in your life. But you know, I do a lot of other things. I exercise. I think that's really important for my mental health as well. I go to especially on weekends or whenever I'm not traveling, I tend to go to the gym and then the spa afterwards. And just, yeah, I think it's really important for me. I do things like acupuncture for stress as well. There's a really great place here in London. And I think, you know, my partners are just incredibly supportive, and I think that's really, really important to me. And does just happen to take a lot more of the daily tasks off my hands. So if that's cooking or cleaning or any of the other things, he tends to take more of that responsibility now, which for me has been really, really handy, so that there can be, you know, a weekend day here and there or an evening here and there where we can just sit and relax. So yeah, it is, but I mean, there are just periods of a startup's life where I'm just very well aware that it is just crazy. And, you know, for us now, where we're launching basically now, and we've onboarded all our therapists and coaches, and where we're testing the platform with some test users, we have so many users on our wait list, but also then we're doing a crowdfunding campaign soon and closing our investment round, our first investment round. So I guess I just kind of know that this period is just a lot, and I am going to be more in survival mode than thrive mode. But I think that's just something that to some degree you probably have to accept. But again, it is not sustainable.
You touched on your parents' background.
Yeah.
I am wholly ignorant when it comes to the stress, the added, not sure the right way of phrasing this, but the added complication necessarily of being from a minority community. Yeah. I am, you know, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, all of those kind of things. Mm. What differences, tangible differences, does it make? Why is this culturally competent care piece a big aspect of what you're doing?
Yeah.
And I ask that from pure ignorance.
No, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, I think a big part of what we're trying to do is education, right? Mm. So we want to do that because we don't believe that any person, doesn't matter what culture or background they're from, should have to pay to educate their therapist or coach. That's a big part of what we do. So we, as a company, as individuals in the team, we really want to educate people. And I think I'm really keen for people wanting to learn about it. So I really do like that we're having this conversation, and that maybe you don't know as much as, you know, someone that is a person of color, but, you know, my partner's white Danish, right? And there's a lot of things he's had to learn as well, right? And I think it's all just about wanting to learn and understand it. So there's a few different things, main things I can kind of say is that we experience that generally others don't. So one is obviously racism, right? That's a big factor. It depends where you live. Some people experience it more than less. It depends, obviously, the degree of your skin tone to what you know, cultural heritage, everything like that, accent, everything like that plays a part in racism. I experienced it a lot when I was living in Sweden. So, you know, I had a nurse was like, "You're the dirty one here. Look at you." It was very direct comments. It got to the point where I was dressing up nice enough to go to the supermarket around the corner, so I wasn't said something to. So obviously those type of experiences I personally didn't have back in Melbourne to that degree. Not saying that it doesn't exist. It absolutely does. But it was just for me personally, that was the first time I'd experienced it that directly. And obviously everyone experiences it to different levels depending on where you are and who you are. But that's a big part. The other thing is cultural identity issues, especially from what we call third culture kids. And so always, and, you know, I was just had a meeting just before this, and, you know, most of us people of color really understand the question of where are you from? And so we always get the question of where are you from? And I'd be like, well, I'm Aussie. And then the response is, well, where are you really from? So we're literally going to do kind of some socials around, you know, how do you answer that question? Because 95% of us get that question, right? So the where are you really from question.
If you don't mind me asking, how do you deal with that question?
Yeah, so I think everyone, this is what we want to do, because everyone deals with it very differently, right? So I have some friends that are like, you know, American Chinese, for example, and like born and raised in America, super American accent. And they'll just be like, they'll go straight to it and be like, I'm Chinese. I'm like, but you're not like fully Chinese, like you're also American. Like that's your culture, a lot of your culture and values as well. And so for me, I'm like, if you're gonna ask me that question in that way, I'm gonna make you work for it. So I answer with, well, I'm Aussie. And they're like, but where are you really from? And I'm like, well, I was born and raised here. And they're like, but like, where are your parents from? I'm like, well, Malaysia. And they're like, but you don't look like you're from Malaysia. I'm like, well, yeah, we have some Indian heritage, but my parents were born and raised in Malaysia. Mm. Like, and so like, I just make them work for it. That's my angle on it, right? And obviously some people ask it in a nice way and you can tell the tone, right? For me, I don't think I'm very like specific on you can or can't say this, but you can tell if the intent is good. Right. So for me personally, I'm like, if they just want to put you into this box and go, oh, you're from there or whatever, and then judge you based on that, like, yeah, I'm going to make you work for it.
So what's the intersection here? Because we've touched on cultural identity, we've touched on mental health, we've touched on entrepreneurship. How does that boil down into the service that you're trying to offer and try and help people in terms of either how they thrive?
Yeah.
Or in terms of resources that can help them deal with some of the challenges they face.
Yeah. So I think, you know, some of the other things I think that a lot of people don't really realize is, yeah. So I guess some of the other things to touch on is like, you know, colorism is a really big thing. So Right. It's basically preferring people of lighter skin to darker skin. And that is quite within communities. So within the Asian communities, African communities. So things like, you know, every year before we visited Malaysia to visit my family, I was not allowed to play outside for a month before we visited because I had to be as white as possible, right? And for me growing up, that was just so normal, right? Like lathered in SPF 50, like not allowed to play outside, like, you know, long sleeve tops in Malaysia, just like so that you don't tan. Like it's just so common. But obviously growing up, it's like most, I wouldn't say most, but like a lot of people just dislike the color of their skin because of how they're treated around it, right? I was lucky that I wasn't forced to use whitening creams or skin bleaching creams, but a lot of people were, right? And so those type of things obviously, yeah, really affect you. I think a lot of people also don't realize that people of color, especially based in the Western world, a lot of us send money home. And so that's like another factor to kind of think about that a lot of us just don't realize, right? Or, you know, I think when I've gone to therapists before, you know, I've said some of the things my parents were doing or saying and whatnot, and some of the responses you get are just really like, they just don't get the culture, right? Mm. So things like, oh, but you should just cut your parents out of your life. And I'm like, well, like, first of all, that should not be the first like response here. unless you're obviously in danger, and I completely understand that, but I obviously wasn't. I was an adult that moved out of home. And so I'm like, why don't we set boundaries first? Mm. Like that should be the first point of call, I would assume. But also I'm not going to trust setting boundaries from you because you're not going to get how to do that with Asian parents, which is a very different way of doing it, right? Or, you know, I get the response of, oh, we'll just sit your mom down and tell her how you feel about that. I'm like, good luck doing that with an Asian mom. You're just going to get hit across the head. Like, this is just, like, this is not going to go down well. So the cultural competency angle is just really, really important because you need someone that just gets it, that doesn't ask the questions of like, oh, well, why can't you sit your mom down and just tell her how you feel?
Yeah.
Like, you know, other people can. Like, so I guess that kind of factor is that getting someone that understands, you know, why do you do this in certain religions? Mm. And not have to ask so many questions, so you have to pay to educate them. That's where it's, yeah.
And obviously that impacts on your personal life and your family life can have a horribly detrimental effect on your professional life.
Yeah.
Does it also leech into professional conversations in the way that you are a female founder?
Yeah.
And you no doubt will go into situations where you are pitching and, you know, if you are pitching and a VC happens to be male, then they may well ask questions that they would ask, that they wouldn't ask a male founder, or they might ask them in a way that is different to how they were asked questions to a male founder.
Right.
Are there similar traps that people fall into where it comes to the color of your skin or the cultural background that you come from?
Yeah, that's been a bit of an eye-opener for me, to be honest, because obviously, again, I was in VC, I was in the realm of kind of startup mentoring and whatnot. So I understand it a bit more than I guess some other founders, right? So I expected, you know, obviously the climate's not the best in general at the moment for investment, but as being a female founder in general, it's just, it is harder, right? You get like, I guess like the promotion versus negative kind of geared questions. That's quite known, right? And so I know how to address those type of questions for sure, because, you know, I've supported a lot of founders on doing the same. And I expected that, it, you know, okay, predominantly white male investors in VC and in angels, to be honest, as well, right? That is still the predominant demographic. And so I kind of expected it to be like, okay, this is going to be a bit of a harder sell, right? Or they're not going to understand it as much, but that's fine. Like, they should, for any aspect, if it's a femtech product, if it's like an agriculture product, whatever it is, they should, if they don't know much about it, ask. Kind of similar to what you're doing now, right? Like, find out about it and learn about it. That's the point of being an investor, right? But I think from my experience of pitching to a lot, like probably, you know, nearly 100 investors, has been majority of them have just assumed they understand it. So they don't ask the questions, or they ask, to be honest, really stupid questions where we've wasted the half an hour or hour answering these really stupid questions where we're just not getting to the point of the actual business. So it's questions like, oh, like they're just not understanding the need. So they're just like, oh, I just don't understand it. Like, you know, I understand racism. Like, why is this a need? Like, why can't a white therapist just educate themselves? Or like, you know, just these questions around like, I don't get the need. Like, I don't think anyone's going to uptake this. And I'm like, okay, so what, like, they're like, oh, but we're really interested. If you get some traction points, we're really interested. I'm like, okay, how many customers do you expect us to have? Like, what do you want us to hit? Give me some concrete numbers. And they're like, you know, there was a few that were like, oh, like 10 customers. I'm like, sorry, you mean 10 individual paying customers? And they're like, yeah. Do you really not believe that we can get 10 individual paying customers? Within a few weeks of our website being live and having like a wait list, we had like hundreds of people on our wait list. Like, we've done basically no marketing, absolutely no ad spend, a couple posts on Instagram, and like one or two on LinkedIn. Like, literally, do you still not believe that? Yeah, no. Okay, you really don't see the problem here. So I think that for me has been really frustrating. And, you know, obviously we have some really amazing angels on our cap table and they completely understand the need. And they're the ones like from the start going, oh my God, I totally get this. And I know this person that will want this. And I know this. So that's amazing. But to have to pitch to so many and answer these, to be honest, quite stupid questions, I'm like really over it. And I think, and I'll say kind of to what point we got to where I've literally had to hang up on several investors. So maybe I can mention it here, but I'm going to do a trigger warning here. Okay. So this isn't a great response. So basically one of the investors, you know, a typical white male investor, had used the example of, yeah, why can't a white therapist educate themselves? Why is this a need? I don't get it. Obviously then I had my typical spiel for why it's a need and blah, blah, blah. And then he used an example, and this is the first example that came to his mind, by the way. And he goes, if someone had been raped before, then a therapist doesn't need to be raped themselves to be able to support them. So what's the difference here? And I was just like, oh my gosh, like if this is really the first example that comes to your mind. And also to say that to a female founder. And you also just don't understand our platform in any way. And so I just said to him, I'm like, if this is your level of education, I think we're done here. And I just hung up because there's zero chance I want you on my cap table. Like, it's just horrific. And also, like, I'm sorry, but you clearly don't understand our platform. Like, if I had gone through that traumatic experience, by the way, you don't know if I have, right? But use trauma, use anxiety, use anything else. But then I would want to go to someone that had gone through a similar experience. Like, it's the whole point of our platform to understand your situation. So yeah, that's kind of what you're dealing with.
Just to try and pull this together.
Yeah.
We've talked on a number of different areas and topics. What do you hope that people take away from this conversation if they're listening along?
I think the big thing, like I mentioned, is that we want to kind of educate, right? Predominantly, most people of color understand the need. They get it from the get-go. There's so many things that we can relate on, to be honest, no matter where you are, like from your cultural heritage. There's so many things that we can relate on. And so we are starting to do, you know, some events coming up. We're starting to kind of push more content on socials as well as like, you know, what is Ramadan? What does that mean? What does that entail? What is Lunar New Year? How does that look like? And so we really just want to educate, I think, a bit more. And so this is not just around, I think, you know, my thing around kind of feminism and pushing for women is that men should do it too. And so this is exactly the same thing here, right? Is that I think we want to really create the proper allyship because it shouldn't just be people of color talking about this and pushing for it. It should also be others, right? So not just males or white males, but it should be white women as well. Because that intersectionality between, you know, being a female, but also being a person of color, it has very different challenges that come with it, right? So not only have I experienced issues being a person of color or a woman of color, but I've also experienced sexual harassment in the workplace, like, which is an issue for obviously anyone, but obviously like as a woman, that was not great. So I think that intersectionality thing is a big factor as well. Or if you're queer and, you know, whatever, like a female or person of color, like that intersectionality needs to be talked about because this kind of one size fits all is just not a thing. So I think there's several aspects here is that one, we want to make sure that people understand and educate themselves and want to learn about it and talk about it openly, right? Because if we don't talk about it, we're not solving anything. Yeah. We're not fixing the situation. But then also, I think on the other aspect of therapy in general or coaching in general is that I do think that a lot of people that have maybe tried therapy go, okay, well, this doesn't work for me because either they've tried someone that doesn't understand their situation at all, or they've kind of just assumed that talking therapy is the only way. There are so many other forms of therapy. So we have therapists that do, you know, sound therapy, that do somatic therapy, which I love because it's like a mix between like your body and your mind. So like kind of healing both so that you release trauma from your body. And I think that's really important, especially I think with a lot of people of color, we store a lot of trauma in our bodies, especially from early on, especially with immigrant parents. So generational trauma is a really, really big thing. But there's so many different things. There's internal family systems, there's inner child healing, there's just so many things besides the norm talking therapy that everyone generally understands. So my thing is try different things, learn, be curious, and just do what's best for you because finding the right therapist, even on our platform, you may not always get the right one to start with. But the point is that with ours, it's like very short amount of questions from the start to finish of match. You'll get like, you know, it's less than 10 minutes. So you don't have to search for hours. And that's what we want to try and save is time and money, right? So get you matched to the right person quicker. So, you know, we've been interviewing some really amazing people, like some footballers and whatnot. And, you know, one of them mentioned that he tried out 15 to 20 therapists before he found his right therapist. like that's so many.
Yeah.
But just having that mentality of, okay, if I try it once, it doesn't work, does not mean that's it. Just keep trying, right? And obviously, if you can go to a platform that tries to match you more based on your situation, then yeah, it's more likely that you don't have to try 15, obviously. But yeah, I just think it's really crucial just to keep learning and keep trying.
Thank you so much for your time today and taking the time out of your schedule to chat to me.
Appreciate
if someone wants to find out a bit more about Tala,
yes.
Tala Thrive, how would they do it?
Yeah, so please do connect on obviously like Instagram, LinkedIn. So it's T-A-L-A Thrive. And yeah, obviously on our website. And so we're still taking people on our wait list. So do sign up or share it. Yeah, just follow us and we're going to be doing a lot more coming up. So
cool.
Yeah, exciting.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.